week 120 of Brada's Branded Thoughts. And before we started recording here, we heard the late and great Chester Bennington of Linkin Park. A guy that I know we've talked about him, guys, on this podcast before. What a sad story of a guy who, what a talent as far as a rock star, a guy who had a very, very difficult childhood, and turned to drugs, turned to alcohol. Seemed like he had gotten things under control, and as we see so many times in this world that we live in, the pressures and the difficulties ultimately overtook the young Chester Bennington, who took his own life. Guys, what's all this? What's this typing? Can we get? Can we put an end to this, please? Thank you, Alex. I don't know what it is about that song, and the song for everybody who's listening here was "Numb" from Linkin Park. But that song, I don't know if it's just because I don't know what it is. You know, we know of other artists who have committed suicide, unfortunately, who have died far too young. We think of guys like Prince. We think of guys like Michael Jackson, Jim Croce. We think of the day the music died, right? There's so many, you know, Avicii, for the young people out there. Everybody knows who Avicii was. So many stories of people dying too young, especially in the music industry. But Alex, what did Chester Bennington mean to the rock world?
Well, he's kind of an interesting case because, you know, to me, he was a rock singer, but he was also kind of straddled into the pop world quite a bit. And Linkin Park was a very unique group. I can't really think of another one like it, but so I don't know. I don't think he got quite the respect from the rock people that he probably should have for his vocals. But, you know, the thing is his songs, like you mentioned with that song, the same thing that made him and so many other musicians great is the same thing that they have to battle their whole lives and ends up, you know, killing them in the end. You know, they would never have been that great if they weren't so angsty and, you know, didn't have so much emotional turmoil. And you kind of see the pattern that I see is a lot of musicians, they either stay really good, putting out good stuff, but maybe they never overcome their personal demons, or they kind of get past that stuff and they kind of quit making good music. That's what I see anyway. And I think that when you have so much heartache and so much turmoil emotionally, that leads to great music, but it also leads to a lot of other things like we saw with Bennington.
Noah, what were your initial thoughts? And the reason why we're talking about Chester Bennington, again, I know we've talked about him on the show before, but we are approaching the 3-year anniversary of his death. And, you know, I know people aren't going to probably think about him 2 weeks from today, because that's he died on July 20th of 2017. But I think they should. People remember, we mentioned people like, we can even throw Elvis Presley in the mix, right? Legends who tragically died far too young. And I think you've got to throw Bennington in the mix there. Noah, what were your initial thoughts when you heard of Chester Bennington's passing 3 years ago?
Well, it's definitely disappointing, and especially someone that's popular and that so many people look to and enjoy his work. It's very disappointing to hear that something like that happened. And of course, you never want to hear that someone has taken their own life. So it's a shame that he's gone. We can't enjoy his work anymore, but, you know, like you said, it's not the first time. Unfortunately, this has happened so many times with some of these great artists.
Micaiah, we disagree on music a lot. I think that's obvious. I think we can all agree that Linkin Park was Chester Bennington and Linkin Park formed a very unique and very talented modern rock band. That, yeah, it did delve into the pop world. But Micaiah, your thoughts on Linkin Park and they're missed. I can tell you that right now. I appreciate them more every year, unfortunately, since Chester's passing.
Yeah, and like my brother said, it's disappointing. And I personally had listened to quite a bit of their work over the years. And so to hear that and to know, in a way, it hurts more than I've had other bands that I followed and liked say that, you know, we're just not going to tour anymore. We're not making any more music. We're just going to call it a career and move on. Like, I also enjoyed Yellow Card, and they recently retired from the music industry. But the situation like this always just hurts that much more, because you wonder about the things that you might have missed, you know, the things that you didn't get to see or to hear from them. And he was obviously a very pained individual when you hear the things he was dealing with and how he tried to deal with those pains. But that seems to be very common among very talented individuals, that as much as they try to overcome their personal demons, some do, but some don't, and it ends up hurting them and everybody else.
One of my favorite memories of Chester Bennington and Linkin Park was the same year he died. I believe it was actually released after he died, potentially, was a carpool karaoke. You guys remember this? A carpool karaoke with the band and with Ken Jeong. Alex, do you remember that episode?
Is that the James Corden show?
I think so, wasn't it? But James Corden was not actually, it was Ken Jeong. It was Ken Jeong and the band.
I didn't see that episode.
You guys have to watch this. And it just, again, you get a glimpse, and we none of us knew Chester Bennington, but you get a glimpse into a guy who obviously had a lot of things go against him and just seemed like a really nice human being. And, you know, very sad, and we know his family is definitely suffering right now, this month, the anniversary of his death. So definitely our thoughts go out to the band and to his family.
If I could interject, it's kind of a weird coincidence, because I don't know if you remember the same summer that Chester died, Chris Cornell died. And
well, Chris Cornell, first of all, Chris Cornell died 2 months before Bennington, and ironically enough, it's not really ironic, I don't think, Chester Bennington took his own life on what would have been Chris Cornell's 53rd birthday. I think this is incredible. Bennington was very emotional when he was on Jimmy Kimmel Live performing One More Light, which is an amazingly touching song. And according to Wikipedia, and I haven't seen this, but according to Wikipedia, Bennington could not finish singing the song because he was getting choked up during both the rehearsal and the live performance. Think about that for a guy who has sang, you know, countless times, probably with all kinds of emotion. That just shows you how much he cared about Chris Cornell.
Yeah, there's definitely a connection there. And the thing about Cornell to me was, he was one of those guys that, you know, kind of a grunge guy that came out of the 90s that I had thought that he'd made it. You know, it seems like a lot of musicians, you've probably heard of the 27 Club. A lot of them don't make it past 27. And he was an older guy and, you know, still ended up taking his own life. And I think that shocked a lot of people. And I think it was hard on Chester Bennington, too.
And I'm reading here. I was not aware of this. Bennington filmed that episode of Carpool Karaoke 6 days before his death. So if that's not sad and eerie, I don't know what is. Anyone want to speak?
You pretty much covered it.
Yeah, I was saying earlier, I guess, that I just saw a movie that was pretty new and recognized Chris Cornell, a song by him playing in the credits. And I don't know if he maybe didn't make it for that movie or if it was right near the end of his life, but it had to have been one of those two, because I think it was a pretty new movie. And it was strange to hear him singing in it. I want to say it was newer than 2017, so I'm not sure how that happened.
Let's transition a little bit, and this is the main thing. We've talked a lot in the past couple months about the coronavirus. We've talked about potentials for Iowa being able to play a normal season. Of course, we know that the Iowa program is dealing with a lot in the media right now. There's a lawsuit potentially they're dealing with. But as far as football is concerned, that'll all get taken care of, we assume. And we don't know if the coronavirus is going to allow a regular season. We've been going back and forth on this. I think the last time we were on this podcast, or maybe the time before that, did I or did I not say that I thought by July 1st we would feel relatively normal?
Yeah.
That was, I think, two podcasts ago.
Did that happen?
For some people.
Well, it's the 4th of July right now, and no.
Okay. All right. So it did not happen. We can all agree on that, right? Now, are we closer than we were two podcasts ago?
Let's see.
I hope so.
50 days have passed, give or take. So,
right.
Obviously.
Can I just say, I read something that said on July 2nd, the United States set a single day record for new coronavirus cases.
Okay,
so things are not looking good right now.
Well, they're not. I have read some research from certain doctors that say that they think the virus is weakening. You guys have heard this, Alex, you've heard this, that it is, there are a certain faction of people that 2 months ago would have been on ventilators and dying in hospitals, and they are home and asymptomatic or very mild symptoms. But the bottom line is, like you said, Noah, cases are high. We know their hospitalizations are high. I don't know if the hospitalizations are as high proportionately to cases. Does that make sense? You know, as far as 2 months ago, because we've had record highs as far as cases. Have we had record highs as far as hospital rooms unavailable?
I have heard of that in some places, like Miami has a hospital that's overflowing. I think they have learned how to
change. Isn't that also like the number one spot in the world right now for coronavirus?
Yeah, Florida's the number one spot because everybody's vacationing, I assume.
So my question is,
as also the NBA will be in Florida, so that would be interesting.
I guess my question is, how much longer? somebody want to answer that question?
Corey, do you think that by July 1st we'll be done with the coronavirus?
Next year?
He didn't specify
what year.
That's true.
Remember that I did not say done. Okay, I did not say done. I thought we would feel relatively normal. But
some people probably do. And
well, but not, no, let's be honest. The reality is it's not normal.
Right? It's not normal, no.
It's not yet, all right? Now, does some state, some data indicate that the virus itself is weakening? It seems to be, yes. As it mutates, the science tells us as a virus mutates, it becomes weaker and weaker, correct?
Sometimes, usually.
And so it is weakening to a degree. We see a lot of people, young people, who are getting it and doing just fine. Unfortunately, there are going to be deaths involved here. It's just a sad situation. We just wonder how much longer this is going to go, and we are playing the waiting game on it. But here we are, July 4th. We keep waiting for something, an announcement about college football. We hear these announcements about Alabama players, Texas players, Clemson players, LSU players, all getting the coronavirus. And you know, why is it all these power programs? Why are they the ones that have these outbreaks? Someone want to explain that to me? Because I have a theory.
So we're seeing it with the NBA too. Pretty much all every team now. I haven't noticed a pattern of what teams, specifically in college, have been having.
Well, I just told you the pattern. I just told you the pattern. It's Clemson, Texas, LSU, Alabama.
I don't know. Explain, I mean, Iowa State.
What do you think?
Okay,
Iowa State had yes, that's true.
So maybe they're just not getting into the news.
Well,
national.
Okay,
news.
That's a theory. That's a theory. Anybody else?
A little bit more of a social theory. Players, coaches, and other staff on these big programs feel invincible because of their success and thus don't protect themselves.
Okay. All right. Noah?
I know it's stupid. It's stupid, but it almost works.
The places with the least restrictions? I have no idea. I'm just throwing that out there.
Is it the SEC?
Well, yes, partially, but Clemson and Texas are not. Let me ask you this. Has anybody here heard, no pun intended, has anybody heard of herd immunity?
No.
Oh, God.
I have heard the term, but I never really thought about
All
what
right.
they mean by
All right, Alex, you want to explain herd immunity to our dear Kirko boys?
It's basically like I think I said on the very first podcast after the coronavirus got to the U.S. is basically everyone's going to get it, or in the terms of herd immunity is you have to get to around 60-70% before it starts to die out, because 60-70% of the people in this country are the ones that are potential spreaders, and there's a lot of people that, you know, don't go out. So once it hits that number-ish, you know, 2/3 to 3/4, that's when the virus will definitely go away, as long as it cannot reinfect people who have already have immunity. So, you know, as long as they have durable immunity.
But here's the point. Here's the point.
Basically, what Sweden's plan was from the beginning is just to let it burn and keep it, you know, high at risk people at home and go for herd immunity as quickly as possible.
My question is it out of the realm of possibility, Micaiah and Noah, is it out of the realm of possibility that these major programs, and I'm not saying they are or they aren't, is it possible that Clemson, Texas, LSU, Alabama are going for herd immunity? Listen, back in the 1900s, they used to have – parents used to send their kids to flu parties. You heard about this? You've heard about this, right? Oh. They would literally send all these kids to parties where they knew the flu was present so all of them could get it. That way they'd all build an immunity to it. Not saying
now,
right. Not saying it's ethical.
Now we have a vaccine.
Noah, is it out of the realm? I'm not saying it's happening. Is it out of the realm of possibilities that these major programs are saying we're going to deliberately have our entire team test positive? It's going to run its course before the start of the season. That way they're healthy for the season. That way we don't have to sit out. Because if Iowa, if Spencer Petras gets the virus 3 weeks in, even if that doesn't mean the team's not going to shut down for that. But if he has to sit out 3 weeks, imagine what that does. If all of the Alabama players have it in July, they ain't going to have it in September. Theoretically, if the theory of herd immunity works for coronavirus, which there's a lot of science behind it we don't know yet, but is it out of the realm of possibilities?
It's not out of the realm of possibility. The problem is there have been cases of people getting the virus again already. So saying you get it once and then you're immune, it doesn't always work.
I haven't heard about any of these cases. Where are these cases of people getting it twice?
I haven't heard any specifics, but I have heard people say that people are have some people have gotten it again after they've been tested and then they don't have it. Some time passes and then they show symptoms again.
Alex, have you heard of this?
It's also very conspiracy theorist. I'm just going to say that.
Well, maybe. But I mean, listen. Yeah, you could say it's conspiracy theorists, but I mean, here's the deal: a lot of money's behind these these teams playing. Are we agreeable on that? There's a lot of money.
There's a lot of money in the players that they bribed to come play for the program.
But my point is, there's a lot of money in these teams playing, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not saying it is. I'm just saying it's not. We're not going to talk about conspiracy theories on here because you know you could. I've always said that there's always a possibility that man has never set foot on the moon. I'm not going to go down that road.
They've been to the moon. It is actually made of cheese. They just don't want you to know.
Alex, your thoughts on that theory? And again, we don't know and we're not going to make claims, but it has been brought up by some major sports reporters and analysts that it's possible this could be happening. Not saying it's ethical, but it's possible.
Yeah, I mean, the alternate theory that to me is the one I would subscribe to is what you have now. And we've seen this in Iowa, actually, where Ames is a good example, where, I think over half of the cases in Ames have been 19 to 24-year-olds, 19 to 25. And, you know, this correlates heavily with the couple weeks after the protests. And they're also implementing a lot more contact tracing right now. So a lot of the results, a lot of the positive cases we were seeing a couple months ago were only if you had severe symptoms is the only way you could get tested. And now, because they have so many more tests, they're able to test everyone or a lot of people that have been in contact with confirmed cases. So you're seeing a lot more asymptomatic cases now because those were just hidden, a few months ago. So also a lot of these schools you mentioned are down south, and that's where a lot of the major hotspots are right now. And then you add in the fact these are college kids, they're going on vacation. I've been watching, pictures and stuff from Okoboji and different places. And you can talk on this a little bit, Corey, but especially the 4th of July weekend, there's a large percentage of college age kids that are vacationing as normal. So I'd like to know what you saw up in Okoboji, how busy it was as far as boaters and all that.
Well, we went camping up there this past week, and we were able to social distance, and we were outside the whole time, which was a nice little getaway, being able to camp. But not everybody was doing that, and I was particularly I don't say startled, but
surprised.
I don't know, and I wasn't surprised. It was more of just a
disappointed.
Yeah, there you go. They're a little disappointed because
disconcerting.
Boat after boat after boat. I mean, hundreds of boats. And there's like, 10 people on some of these boats. And are you telling me that, these are obviously people just hanging out? I don't remember seeing one mask in Okoboji on anybody. Now, maybe I just missed it. I'm missed it. I'm sure somebody had masks. And again, if you're outside, I'm not gonna, but it was very odd. It was very odd, right? So it's just gonna be interesting to see how. I guess what we're coming to is this. I hear a lot of people say the SEC is play. Steve Dace, who does the Bigger Ten podcast, a guy who I've loved listening to for years. He used to do the Hawkeye Nation podcast with John Miller before John Miller left the sports world. But he keeps saying SEC's playing football. The SEC is – football's a religion down there. They're going to play football. So my question is, are we playing football? Is Iowa playing football? Yes or no?
Yes, but without fans. Obviously. I'm even more sure of a no fans thing than I was the first time I brought this up.
Alex?
Well, it's an interesting situation because it looks to me like the NBA is going to happen, but they're playing in a bubble. And this is a huge stark contrast to the possibility of what college football is going to look like. I mean, they're not going to be able to do that. So I don't know. I honestly don't know. It's going to be, if they do play, they're going to have to figure out how to either just live with the fact that these players are going to get it, because this is what's going to happen. I mean, if they do play, the players are going to transfer it to each other if they haven't already had it at a fairly high rate. And I don't think they're going to be able to stop that. So they're either just going to have to basically live with that, or they're going to have to cancel it. So I don't see a third option, because they're not going to be able to contain everyone like they are in Orlando with the NBA. So I'd say one of those two options.
I would like to officially submit a proposal to the NCAA that they moved all the Big Ten teams to Iowa City to play at a neutral location, except for, of course, Iowa. All of the Big Ten games can happen at Kinnick.
You know what a good location, a neutral location would be? It would be like Indiana, because nobody goes to Indiana football games anyways. Although if there's no fans, I suppose you could do that. The problem is you can't take kids out of school. These are not professional athletes.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is, I mean, I think we know the NFL is happening, right? We all agree the NFL is happening. But college football is totally different.
Right.
Well, there is one thing to be said here. You brought this up in the first conversation we had about this. Being a college environment, these guys are around each other anyways, so they can try and control the environment around them. And there are some coaches that are saying, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility that we could do this. Just, you know, have some sort of controlled environment around these players. The problem is going to be if a player has a case and then he transmits it to his teammates and then they transmit it to another school, these are all problems that could be faced in the system even without fans. At this point, just saying there's no fans, you're limiting the risk to the fans.
Here's what I don't want, because I think this season will be played. I don't think a lot of Power 5 schools, and I've seen at least one or two smaller Division 2 schools, Division 3 schools, cancel their seasons already. I don't think Power 5 schools can sustain not having football this season. I really don't. And I think they're going to play. And here's my big fear, all right? Whether or not we've, you know, in 2 months, whether or not, you know, the numbers have went way down or we're feeling comfortable or not, my fear is we start playing and, you know, something happens where several players get infected. All of a sudden, a team like Iowa, I'm not saying that they're definitely going to, you know, the whole team is going to shut down. But if several teams in a conference get infected, they cancel a couple of weeks, then they play three more weeks and they cancel. I'm afraid we're going to end up having like a 7 or 8 game broken up season with no true champion of the conference and no real national championship with no college football playoff. That's my biggest fear with this. I think we're playing football. I don't see any way the entire nation, a college football nation, doesn't play football. What I fear is it's going to be broken up because they're going to try to force it here in the fall. And, you know, we're not going to get a full season in. I would much rather play in the spring. And again, I'm not the one playing, so I know a lot of people say, well, player safety. Well, if you're concerned about player safety, about playing two seasons in one calendar year, then how are you going to have kids playing in the fall when the numbers are still high. So I would rather a spring season, if I had a choice between, you know, spring, a full spring season and a broken up fall season. Anybody?
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I'd rather have college football in the spring than not have college football at all. At this point, it's getting close enough to the start of college football season that I think the NCAA needs to announce something.
Oh, yeah. I don't think the NCAA necessarily, I don't know if they'll be the ones making this decision or not. They've kind of taken a back seat and said, hey, schools and commissioners are making these decisions. But we continue to wait. And I know, Alex, I said to you a while back that I felt like this summer, this year, despite this pandemic and having to be inside so much, I felt like this year was largely going by very fast. And you'd think it would be going by slowly, but I don't feel that way. I feel like I look at the calendar and I think, holy crap, it's July 4th.
Yeah. Yeah, to me, I think what that is, and I can't speak for you, but for me, time doesn't seem to have, like, for myself, when you're not having fun or when you're bored, time goes slowly. I think everyone can agree on that. But if you're not making memories, if you're doing the same crap every day, if you look, let's say at the end of a week, you look back at your week, you're not going to remember anything. And I think what memories do is I think they make it seem like more time has elapsed than if you don't have memories. And I think that's, for me, what's happened here is because I haven't been doing nearly as much. When I look back, it feels like that time just kind of was lost and doesn't feel like I lived that long. So,
well, you're not doing anything.
What's that?
You're not doing anything.
Right. That's my So okay. I think that's why it feels to me like, you know, I can't, I'm the same way. You know, I look at the calendar, it's like it's July 4th. How did that happen? But so it's, time is a tricky thing.
So my point is, we are going to look at the calendar and say, it's game week. What happened? that is what, listen, can we all agree on that? Didn't it just feel like a couple weeks ago that we watched the Holiday Bowl? And that was in December. Okay.
To me, it feels a little bit longer than
maybe a month and a half.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like it's passed much since mid-March.
So my question again, and we talked about this a month ago. Micaiah, you think we're going to play football in the fall with no fans?
Mm-hmm.
And I think all of us except Alex believed that in September, things would still not be to a point where people are going to be able to spend really, you know, time watching games together. Again, it's 2 months off. It's hard to predict at this point. But if you had to predict, does anybody change their viewpoint? I think, Alex, you were the only person that said you didn't feel like at that point things would have improved enough. And I had said vehemently, I said, by September, we're going to feel a lot different. Things are going to be a lot different by September. That was just a prediction. Does anybody feel differently than how they felt a month ago when speaking on this? We're speculating, but does anybody feel differently now?
Not really. For me, I was kind of like in between whether we would be able to meet together in a small group like that, and then we won't. But if anything, I'd say it's more likely that we're not, because of how slow progress has been towards going back to what we consider normal.
2 months is a long time, Noah.
It is.
Not anymore.
Well, it's been 4 months, and a lot has happened in 4 months. I mean, we saw the numbers going way down, right? About a month ago, we saw the numbers really going down. And they spiked. Right.
Well, I would like to point out, and you know, I'm using more Iowa numbers just because, you know, it's hard to keep track of everywhere. But it does seem to me like, and this is just my own theory, that places that got hit hard earlier are not seeing the same as much of a spike as places that didn't get hard. So, you know, Story County versus Marshall County is a good case study, I think, for that. I don't know if you guys heard this, but the CDC came out a couple weeks ago and said that in their opinion, and they can't prove it, but they think that about 10 times the number, because originally they were saying, I don't know what it was, 5% infection rate across the country. Now they're saying that as much as 10 times that many people are walking around with antibodies, which is, I'm hoping it's actually higher than that, but I think they're probably close. But I mean, that's a huge revelation because, you know, they weren't, the fact that they were willing to come out and say that says a lot. And I think that the pattern that I've seen, in at least in places that have, you know, had sustained a big hit early on, is it does seem to me like we're pretty high in that infection rate. I think over 50% in a lot of places. To me, it feels like in Marshall County, if I had to throw out a number, it feels like we're over 50%. But, you know, we're still at, I think, around 900 to 1,000 positives, which is nowhere near half of the population, but that's just who's been confirmed positive. So I think at this point, it's going to become a race between herd immunity and vaccine, which one can get there first. And I don't know, man, it almost seems to me like the herd immunity is going to get there first, but
it doesn't sound like there's going to be a vaccine this year. I mean, I haven't heard that from anybody, that people think we're going to have a widely distributed vaccine this year.
For early next year or even summer of next year.
Yeah, so I mean,
for a vaccine.
And going off of the antibodies thing, I mean, if you move the college football season out to spring, that gives more people an opportunity to have antibodies in their system or for a vaccine to be widely available.
It also gives more time for this virus to weaken, right? I mean, if it's weakening already over the past 2 months, imagine what it's going to be by spring, right? I mean, at some point, would we all agree, at some point, if this thing continues to weaken, it's going to be, you know, even though we have a vaccine for the flu, that's not 100%. We're going to view it as, okay, it's a virus, but it's not going to be to the level of seriousness that we know it has been, right? I mean, we all agree on that.
Well, something I want to touch on regarding that. I am almost hesitant to say it just because it's not a positive thing, but when you're talking about mutations, the problem is we don't know. We really don't know. That's the problem as far as how this is going to play out as far as having durable immunity. We don't know if how long that'll last. So let's say you've had the coronavirus. We have had more data lately, but it's still not totally clear. What Noah mentioned earlier about people getting it twice. From what I've seen from that, it seems to me like that's a very tiny, tiny, tiny number. And we see the same thing with the flu, where some people just have weak immune systems and they'll get the flu twice when that shouldn't happen. And that's not unique to this virus. That's just, you know, people that have weak immune systems. So you're going to see that with any virus. However, if you had enough of a mutation in the virus, that could also, you're talking about it weakening. Usually what that means, it's not just weakening, it actually gets more contagious, which some could view as a good thing. Okay, it gets more contagious, but less severe. But if it were to mutate enough that the antibodies were no longer effective, that's not a good scenario. And that's actually what happened with the Spanish flu. And I know that's an influenza virus and this is a coronavirus, but there's a lot to think about there that's not, I don't think, so cut and dry as far as it weakening. So we just don't know. It's still early on enough that we don't know how this is going to play out.
If that is the case, that it mutates to that point, it's also possible that what would be a vaccine might only treat one form of the virus, the original coronavirus, that now there's like a COVID-20 that's maybe not as deadly, but, you know, is a mutation and is far enough different genetically that the vaccine doesn't treat it. And that might set things back. I don't know.
There's definitely a lot of possibilities, but we can't really.
I'm not a professional.
Yeah.
I think we should just get.
I'm getting paid for this.
All we have to do is set up a big projector, and we have a huge screen. We have chairs 6 feet apart. And then we have these gigantic clapper hands that we high-five each other with these gigantic clapper hands. That way, that are at least 3 feet. That way, 3 + 3 = 6. No?
Really?
No? Okay.
So we're going to go out and start whacking yardsticks together to make noise when someone scores a touchdown?
because slapping each other's hands is so important. Like, we have to do that. Might as well cancel the season.
It's scoring.
Yeah, it is.
Well, I don't know. Alex, how do you feel about what you would rather see college football-wise? I mean, do you want a season this fall if there's a chance that it gets broken up, or would you rather wait till spring and have the possibility of some players not playing because they're focused on the NFL draft?
Well, I'm not sure what I said the last podcast when we had this conversation, but I think it was to the effect that I'd rather see a spring season, just because, like you mentioned, it's going to be really messy to have a season this fall, in my opinion. So I'd probably stick with that. I mean, like you said, you know, a lot of players have said with the NBA season that, okay, whoever wins this year, assuming they complete it, whoever wins is going to have an asterisk next to the championship. And my comeback to that was, well, every Golden State Warriors championship with Kevin Durant had an asterisk next to it anyways. But anyways, I think you're going to see that same thing with football. If, like you said, if there's going to be a really broken up, messy season, you know, what is it really going to mean? And maybe it'd be better to hold it off until next spring and have a proper season.
Here's the issue with that. I agree with you, but let's be honest. The concern with commissioners, with athletic directors, with the NCAA is TV ratings and probably TV ratings, because fans aren't going to be at these games. And if, let's be honest, if they play in the fall, if they play 9 games in the fall, even if it's just 9 games and they're broken up and there ends up not being a champion, a real champion, what do you guys think the TV ratings will be for those 9 games?
It's not going to be very good.
I think they'll actually be amazing, depending on what else is going on.
All right.
People are starving for entertainment.
It's time for Noah and Micaiah to fight. That was a perfect disagreement. I have my opinions. Huge debate. Go.
Why do you think the ratings will be good?
Okay. The fact that there is some sort of sports going on, people are going to love it. Problem is, the product is not going to be as good.
You're echoing, Noah. Try to debate without echoing.
Okay. I have a really tough situation because of 2 microphones in the same room. Okay. So, the quality of play is not going to be as good. There are going to potentially be star players sitting out and mix-ups in the schedule and all of these other factors that could interfere, and you're just rolling with it. You're not convinced in the least.
Look, the fact is that it comes to a certain point as a sports fan. I'm kind of this way about basketball a little bit, and there are other people that are way more crazy than I am, and especially about football. People are dying to see anything that's even close to entertainment. If you filmed grass growing, a competitive grass growing, there would be people lining up to watch it.
I mean, he was watching NASCAR 2-3 months ago.
All right, Noah, so, listen.
Look, anyone at this point could that just show backyard sports and get a million views on YouTube. This is an actual representative product of something that people are familiar with, that they're emotionally attached to. It gives them a feeling of normalcy that they want to cling to in these hard times. And that is going to draw people in. Okay?
Noah can see that he lost.
Could we see like wrestling match between you two, some kind of sport?
If the NFL
can... Yeah, hey, why don't you guys wrestle? You're on camera. You're skinnier. You're skinnier than ever in the past. Take off your headset.
If the NFL comes back, even on a reduced schedule, especially if there are no other sports going at that time, every single regular season game will get viewing as if it was almost a Super Bowl.
That's my point. And so, Noah, I'm sorry.
There's also nothing else to do at this point.
Noah, I'm sorry. I've got to go with Makai on this one. To me, it's a no-brainer. Those 9 games, college football games.
You're calling Noah a no-brainer?
Yes, he is.
Noah, those 9 games, or 6 games, however many they end up playing, as little as they may mean in the long run, will get out, like Micaiah said, they will get all-time high views. Would you agree with that, Micaiah?
Yeah, what else are people going to do
and
anyway?
That's what I'm afraid of, that the people behind the money-making side of college football, which is a huge side of it, are going to push for the season this fall.
You mean the only side?
Well, they're going to push for the season this fall because they want the best players to play. They don't want to push it back until spring and have the Alaric Jacksons of the world. And, you know, even if this was last year, the A.J. Epinesas, the Tristan Wirfs, they don't want those guys to sit out because of the NFL draft.
Right.
So they want them to play this fall. They'll get the views they want, even if it's cut down by a few games and there's not a real champion. It don't matter because they got national championship viewer ratings throughout the broken up season. That's my fear as a fan. And that's not what we want. That's not what we want as fans. We want to watch good football.
Well, and with the whole idea of the spring college football schedule, the people in charge don't want it to happen. So they just do not want it to happen. For example, Penn State athletic director Sandy Barber called the spring season a last resort. So, and part of that is because of the close proximity to the 2021 season as compared to the normal fall schedule.
That's an excuse.
Yeah, it is just an excuse. And they would probably use that excuse for a truncated season.
But there is... There is a concern with players playing that many games in a calendar year. You know, and it does mess up spring football for the following season, right? But I mean, I look at it too, and I think we said this on a previous podcast. Can you imagine how freaking awesome that spring will be if we're watching college football, March Madness, NBA basketball, and yes, I know you guys don't like golf.
Super Bowl.
Super Bowl. All this stuff. Bang, 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 bang.
So you kick it off. You kick it off with the Super Bowl. March Madness runs through the middle, and then you get the college football national championship in May.
And then NBA playoffs,
and then the finals.
Everybody would say, well, you can go back outside. And I won't want to go back outside. Stay it in.
So you're saying making up for lost time.
Right. It's ironic about...
A year's worth of sports happening in a 4-month span.
Right. So with that being said, before we start talking, I want to talk a little actual football, and we are going to preview the NBA season. Before we do that, let's go around the panel here. What is your prediction right now? What happens with the 2020-2021 college football season? Noah, you're up first.
What I think is going to happen is that...
This is going to change every week, but go ahead and make a prediction.
Right now, I think that what's going to happen is that they're going to push for the fall schedule as it currently stands and hope that things don't go awry. So no fans, try and control the environment around the teams as much as possible and try and limit the number of cases. And if they have to make adjustments to the schedule, oh well, they'll make do. That's what I think they're going to push for.
Okay.
This is going to sound a little bit more crazy, especially coming from me, who's usually a conservative guesstimate person, except for 10-2 Iowa Hawkeyes. I was only a game off, by the way. Season gets delayed by a month, month and a half. No fans. Obviously, I've said that I don't know how many times, and I think we all agree on that one. No pre-conference schedule, just conference scheduling, conference championship, and then the national championship.
What about bowl games?
I don't know. Probably bowl games. That sounds likely.
So is there gonna be...
Andy, if you think about the viewership of those bowl games,
yeah,
to make money, I mean, and that's huge money for all those bowl games.
Is there going to be college football playoff?
If they have bowl games, why not?
I think what we need to do is, if for some reason we can't meet together and watch these games, we need to Zoom and watch these games. Is there a way to...
He says we're on Skype.
Yeah, I got no allegiance to Microsoft. Alex, what are your predictions?
I honestly haven't spent that much time thinking about it, just because I don't think anyone's in a position to make a decision yet. But
we're going to hear, I think everything I hear, we're going to hear an announcement about football within the next couple of weeks.
I'm sure there will be. I just don't think anyone can make an educated one. Yeah.
No, they can't keep putting this off forever.
Something I read, and I've been getting a lot of this from a New York Post article. Some people have said they really need to make a decision within the next 3 weeks or so in order to get everything set up.
I think that's being very liberal as far as I think needs to be within the next week and a half. I think 3 weeks, 21 days, that's the 25th of July. Once you hit August, I mean, you're prepping this fall camp, and I mean, you're full steam ahead.
Well, they said on August 7th, teams can begin practice. So
right,
that's still before practice. Teams would start practicing.
But you still have
to get everybody together.
But they've already got they've got voluntary workouts going on. I mean, at some point, I just don't know how you can lead people along. That's why I think there's going to be football this fall. Because how do you put it off at this point? Alex?
I was hoping you wouldn't come back to me so I didn't have to give an opinion. I'll just go with what everyone else is saying. I think they'll probably push for it as far as whether or not they'll, you know, have to cancel it halfway through, or if they're going to just, you know, go without personnel. I think the real danger here is your coaching staff, because let's be honest, these players are not going to die from this virus. It's just not going to happen. But you have a lot of older coaching staff that very well could, and that's the problem. So there is still concern there, and they're not going to be able to contain it like the NBA is going to, or the NFL probably will. So,
especially when you think about how many teams are involved and the likelihood that multiple people per team get infected, that's a lot of people over so many teams.
Well, the bottom line is, I think it's 80% of the world's population that has died from this have been nursing home people. And that's sad, but it's just a fact. 95%, I believe, of the deaths worldwide of this virus have been of people over 50. So those are the individuals at risk. Of course, younger people can die. It's possible, especially those that have immune deficiencies or issues, pre-existing conditions. But yeah, I think it's clear you're probably not going to have anybody in a Power 5 conference, a player, die from this. Probably.
The only concern would be with the respiratory issues, and you have somebody on a football field, potentially in the heat, early in the season.
So,
running around.
Wait a minute. So you got respiratory issues and you're playing football.
Respiratory issues.
I'm not talking about. Listen, I am not advocating that Jake Morton go out and play football right now. Okay.
Way to call him out.
Listen, we would all be afraid if Jake got the virus, wouldn't we? Would we be afraid of that?
Yeah.
Because he is.
He's asthmatic.
He's got asthma. Right?
Well, so do I.
Well, yeah, but I think his is worse.
Jake's a little. I've only seen Alex with. Great thing. Have you used an inhaler before? You have,
I just started using them again this past fall, and they really do help a lot. So I probably should have been using them for years.
I should probably get one.
Yeah, they give them out to just about anybody now. It's like, Corey, didn't you say you're on Singulair? I always thought that was an asthma medication, but they're giving it for allergies now.
Let me see.
I'm on Telecast. Yeah.
It's supposed to. Well, yeah, it's probably more placebo than anything, but I'd have problems breathing when I'd be laying down and my sinuses would be shut, swelled shut. And then you're trying to breathe. You ever have it where your sinuses are swelled shut and you're trying to lay on your stomach or your side, you can't breathe, and you ever have that?
I have that standing up on the basketball court.
I'm talking about laying in bed.
Yes, yes. I have sleep apnea, so I know what that's like.
Has that gotten better for you, Micaiah, after losing weight?
No, actually, I'd say if anything, it's been worse, but maybe that's just, I have really bad allergies over the summer months. It might just be the sun.
Yeah.
Well, feel free to call me at like 3 o'clock in the morning. Hey man, I can't sleep.
I should have called you two nights ago.
Why were you up at
play eight ball pool?
I was awake from 4 to 6. I woke up at 4 and I stayed awake for 2 hours.
And Noah, you never played me in WGT, buddy boy.
I don't even have that game.
Well, giddy up. All right.
So far off topic.
If I had to make my prediction, I do think that once we hit September, here's my hope. I hope they push for it. This would be the best thing, right? I think we'd all agree on this. They push for it for money reasons. And they take all the risks they can. I mean, we don't want that. But they push for it for money reasons, and it ends up being great. The numbers have gone down by September. They don't go back up, and we have a regular season. And it leads us right back into college basketball, NBA, everything in November. And vaccine comes early next year, and – you know, this fall and winter, it's sort of a thing of the past. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but would we all agree that'd be the ideal scenario? We don't want to see it in the spring because we want to see the best players play a full season. And right. I think we all agree we don't want to have to wait until February to see football. Do we want to wait? I mean, heck, it's July. That's like 7 more months. Does anybody want to wait 7 more months?
No.
Okay. Oh my gosh.
So, I've got an interesting thing I dug up. I think I mentioned it to you, Corey. This is off topic, but when I was in Ames a couple weeks ago before you left for Okoboji, but how early on, and this is relevant because we were talking about you being on Singulair. We were talking about how early on in March, a lot of the scientists were saying that asthma is a severe risk factor for COVID-19. And so far, that hasn't really proven to be the case. We've seen an underrepresentation of asthmatics in severe symptoms and deaths from COVID. And I don't know if there's a lot of attention on this right now, but one thing that I dug up is there was a study in February of 2017 So the article is entitled "Asthma Drugs Also Prevent Influenza Viral Pneumonia." So as you know, coronavirus causes viral pneumonia, which is how it's killing people for the most part. Viral pneumonia is hard to treat because antibiotics do nothing for it. To sum this study up, this was University of Virginia School of Medicine. Basically, they found that Singulair and Acculate, which I have never heard of, but had quite an impact in preventing severe pneumonia from the flu. It was influenza A. And it actually blocked, let's see here, it actually blocked the virus's ability to infect the alveoli cells, which are the little air sacs that are deep in the lungs that get infected with pneumonia.
Are those in any relation to ravioli?
I think they're shaped the same, actually. They probably look the same once they got infected by...
All right, COVID. Never mind.
But anyways, it showed an ability to block that. And so this is a crackpot theory for the most part, but because, and I wasn't aware of it before, but because Singulair especially is so widely used amongst asthmatics and other people, evidently, I'm wondering if there could be a correlation between the fact that fewer asthmatics are having severe complications than they thought they would anyways. And a lot of these people, almost all of asthmatics, seem to be on Singulair. So it's interesting. I just, you know, thought that was interesting. I can send that article to you, but there's not a lot that can really treat viral pneumonia. And the fact that this was able to is interesting. Maybe we have, an effect on COVID with this drug. And I don't think there's really been any studies. I need to look this up again, but a lot of asthmatics that are out there on Singulair, and they have been underrepresented in deaths from COVID so far. So you might find that interesting.
All right, let's transition to actual football. In these coming weeks, I hope that we'll be able to start regularly pumping out shorter podcasts, but actually being able to have regular podcasts, because as we know...
What is a shorter podcast?
As we know...
Corey, all you have to blame for that is yourself. Just say.
I feel like 2 hours.
You're the conductor of this train.
As we know, every week now, I mean, I think like I said, now we're in July. So we're, you know, every week we're probably going to get news, right? Every week is going to become, you know, once we hit August, we're going to start talking about, theoretically, we're going to start talking about camp, injury news, regular stuff. I mean, game stuff. And this month, we're going to hear a lot more about announcements. So let's talk theoretically. If Iowa plays football this fall, we take a look at their depth chart. And one change that we've seen since the previous podcast that we recorded was the addition of two Northern Illinois defensive linemen. And one of those defensive linemen is a guy that grew up being a Hawkeye fan. He's a grad transfer. He's got 1 year of eligibility remaining. Remember big old Jack Heflin? You can look at any of my text messages that I send you.
I give them a cursory glance.
Cursory glance, that's a great quote.
All right. Well, Jack Heflin is a...
I would read them if you sent me less than 3 a day.
Yeah, right.
Noah, can you hear me?
Yes.
I have to compliment you on your choice of words. I remember one time we were playing football at the practice field, Miller practice field, and I asked you something about how you were so easily able to cover your brother. You said on the spot something to the effect of, well, it helps that Micaiah was taking a leisurely stroll across the field. I love your choice of words. Cursory glance, leisurely stroll. Those are very well done. Congratulations.
All right. Thank you.
So Jack Heflin was, I believe, a second team. He was honorable mention All-America from Pro Football Focus. He was the team's defensive player of the year last year. He was the All-MAC second team defensive tackle. A first team choice by Pro Football Focus. He led Northern Illinois in tackles for loss and quarterback sacks. Keep in mind, he's a tackle. Ranked second in the MAC and tied 16th nationally in forced fumbles with 3. And let's be honest. I mean, this is a guy 6'4", 319 pounds, Noah. All right. This is a big boy. And, you know, this is an Iowa team that could use some help. They lost Cedric Lattimore. They lost Brady Reif. So they get Jack Heflin. We also just got word last week that another Northern Illinois defensive lineman, Matt Lorbeck, defensive end, is coming to Iowa. Now, he may redshirt this year because he's got an extra year to redshirt. He's got 1 year of eligibility remaining. But he's more of a stand-up defensive end. Kind of reminded me a little bit of like an Amani Jones. So you look at the defense right now. Chauncey Golston, Davion Nixon, Austin Schulte, Noah Shannon, Jack Heflin, Joe Evans, Zach Van Valkenburg, John Wagoner. I mean, I know you lose Epinesa. I know you lose Lattimore and Reef, but are you guys feeling all that worried about the defensive line?
I usually worry about the defensive line. It's Iowa. I think they'll be in pretty good shape. I'm not worried about the defensive line.
How do you feel about big old Jack Heflin?
Sounds like a good addition.
Alex, your thoughts on the defensive line?
Like has already been said, I don't worry too much about that with Iowa. It seems like they always get them big corn-fed boys to step up. But,
I would like you to mentioned, attention. Corey, you mentioned, what, 6, 7 names for 4 positions? I mean, that, like they had last year, that's depth. You can rotate guys in and out to keep them fresh, which can be a huge advantage later in the game as the offensive line of the other team starts to wear out.
And what about this wide receiver group? Brandon Smith, Amir Smith-Marset, Tyrone Tracy, Nico Reganey, Oliver Martin. Giddy up now. Okay.
Giddy
can
up
we
again?
Agree? Can we agree they're loaded at wide receiver? Can we all agree on that?
Yes.
Okay. Running back. Future Heisman candidate? Am I going too far? Tyler Goodson? Is that going
probably
too far, boys?
A little bit too far.
Alex, your just thoughts on that? Bit. Is he a future Heisman candidate?
The possibility of any Iowa player being a Heisman candidate.
It's happened.
How about that team, you know, that combination of Tyler Goodson and Mekhi Sargent? Alex?
No, I like it. I mean, especially Goodson. I'm pretty high on him as far as his abilities. But, you know, Sargent's a solid all-around guy and who's probably going to be the anchor as far as, you know, he can pretty much do everything. So he kind of reminds me of, I think I've said this before, but he kind of reminds me of Kanziri from years ago where he could kind of do a bit of everything.
So, Alaric Jackson, Mark Kallenberger, Cole Bamworth's going to be a senior, Kyler Schott's back, Justin Britt, Cody Entz, they add Coy Kronk, who is a fifth-year guy from Indiana, started like 40 games at Indiana at tackle. What a replacement for Tristan Wirfs. And we were talking about being a big boy. Noah, you want to read his bio here?
Well, it says height 60-50. I assume that's 6'5". and 315 pounds. Talk about the immovable object.
6'5", 315. So they added a defensive tackle that was 6'4", 319. And an offensive tackle who's 6'5", 315.
Apparently they're just aiming for the biggest guys that can't be moved around.
That's all their right. only criteria in recruiting.
All right. So, are you guys – I mean, listen, are you guys worried about the line? I think a lot of people say, oh, we're not going to worry about the offensive line. Remember how bad the offensive line was at times last year, those guards? My thoughts here is everybody thinks Mark Kallenberger is more of a natural tackle. If that's true, then put him at tackle and get this big boy in there at guard. Would you agree with that, Noah? If Kallenberger is a natural tackle. Because we saw last year that Kallenberger, Schott, Britt, these guys struggled at guard. Now, maybe they improved over the offseason. We're fine on Linderbaum. But these two positions, left guard and right guard, are the ones we're concerned about. Would we agree with that?
Yeah.
So, they've got some movement they can do here, I think. If you feel comfortable with Kallenberger at tackle, I'd put this big boy in there at guard. Let that big boy clog up some space, right? Let him take up some space in there. All right. Now,
we have a very nuanced view of how football works, don't we?
All right. Now, we move over to the tight end. Could this be the next Fant and Hockenson duo? Sean Beyer being Fant, Laporta being Hockenson. Anybody?
No.
No. So you don't buy it.
You think Beyer is Fant?
You know what? 2 years ago, people were comparing Beyer to Fant. They were saying he was more of an athletic type of tight end like Fant was.
Yes, but that was 2 years ago. What about last year?
Beyer struggled with injuries last year, as I recall. But, I mean, are we all in agreement that Sam Laporta definitely showed some stuff as a freshman, and you add in Beyer next to him, that's a pretty good duo?
Yeah, I liked what Laporta showed.
If you've got something to say, then say it. Having two first-round tight ends in the NFL draft, not likely to happen again.
But what are your thoughts on Sam Laporta, Makai?
Wow. What amazing audio. They can't hear your thumbs up.
All right, so we're comfortable all the way. We're basically... We're not scared of any of these positions, right? These are all just locks. All right, we go down to quarterback. That's probably the big question, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people like Spencer Petras. Amir Smith-Marset basically described Petras as being tall, big, like Stanley, but throws a much softer ball than Stanley. I think we'd all agree that's going to be a breath of fresh air. Would you agree, Alex?
When the owner's going to be... It's probably not saying much because Stanley had the power of Brett Favre and the accuracy of I'm not sure who. So.
I mean, Brett Favre? I like Stanley, but let's be honest. Again,
I hope he's good. The Vikings need a quarterback.
I know, but won't it kind of be nice to see more of a – I hope he's more of a Ricky Stanzi type, a guy who – throws a more catchable ball. Won't that be nice?
A lot of passes that were just uncatchable.
Because they're like just light, like bullets, just you know, actual
out
bullets.
Of reach too.
Yeah.
They're throwing balls into the dirt at their feet.
So my
You have so a my softer point is, touch, and they're not coming as fast. You have to have a lot more, be a lot more accurate, and a lot more timing based.
But my point is, everybody wants to talk about how this, you know, we shouldn't expect much because this is a freshman quarterback or a sophomore quarterback, first year quarterback, and you know we've had no spring ball, blah blah blah. You look at Kirk Ferentz's track record with first year quarterbacks, pretty darn good. Okay, Jay Christensen. Is one example of probably not being a great first-year quarterback. But you look at a guy like Brad Banks. you look at a guy like Ricky Stanzi, Jake Rudock, CJ Beathard, Nate Stanley. They were all pretty darn good their first year. Would we all agree with that? So I'm not that afraid of Spencer Petras starting. I feel like they know what they're doing. They've made it very clear that he's their guy. Alex Padilla will be there as well as Deuce Hogan. But I don't know. I think that's probably the biggest question, but at the same time, it's not. I'm not worried about fullback. Big old Turner Palisard is going to probably man the booth there at fullback. As we take a look at his profile, 6'2", 246 out of Frankfort, Illinois.
Sounds like Noah's death.
So
before I started losing weight, yeah.
So
actually, that was exactly me.
So would you be okay lining up against him?
Noah has 246 pounds of not muscle.
That is dead weight.
Can right. I just say though, when he moves when he goes left, his body goes right. Can I just say though, does it really matter if Petras is anything better than okay? It's a Ferentz-led offense.
That's what I'm saying.
It's going
to
be run first, second, and third.
My question is,
then punt on fourth.
My question is, if the guard position gets figured out, am I crazy in saying that this could be a dominant offense?
That does seem to happen about once every 5 years.
But I mean, look at the talent.
Ago. Yeah.
Okay. Somebody.
The biggest question would be Petras.
Well, I know, but you just got done saying that it's not that big of a deal. You see,
going to be an elite offense.
Well, I mean,
that's the difference.
Yeah, sure, but I mean, you just got done saying, okay, run first, tight ends. You've got like five. You've got like honestly, they've got five receivers they can count on. Five. All right, and you've got Alaric Jackson, who is a future first round draft pick, Coy Kronk, who's a fifth-year starter in the Big Ten, and you got all these guards you can shift around. Maybe you want to pull Kronk in there. You want to put Kallenberger at tackle. But you've got Schott, Banwert, Britt, Ince, Kallenberger. All these guys have experience playing. You just hope that I know they haven't had spring ball. These guys are still working. You hope that somebody's emerged and can play guard consistently, right? Yeah. Sam Laporta coming back is huge with Sean Beyer. I mean, so many people. You watch some of these training videos of Tyler Goodson. Let me see if I can find this. This guy is just – I mean, he was a freshman last year. We saw the talent. Alex, what do you foresee with Tyler Goodson?
What do I foresee?
Yeah. I mean, what is this a guy that can be – a future NFL back who might be one of the best backs in Iowa Ferentz history? Or is that too early to say that? Because I mean, let's be honest, Iowa has missed on a lot of guys over time. Melvin Gordon was a guy that I believe he committed to Iowa, ended up flipping to Wisconsin. Look at that guy. Look at that dude. The only other guy that you can say that about in Iowa that ended up going playing in the NFL was Sean Green. And he kind of burned out 3 years, flamed out 3 years into the NFL. So Iowa, for as much as you want to say, well, they're run first, they really haven't produced very many elite running backs.
Yeah, that's true. They're definitely overdue for a guy. And we kind of hoped that Wadley would be that guy, but he never really, I don't think, put on the weight necessary. He was good in his role, but he wasn't an all-around back who could, do everything. He was good in space, but
very limited player.
Right.
Very
hopefully
explosive.
Goodson can be that guy.
Let's just take a look at this. I'm going to show you just, and again, this is just off season drills, but just, you can see, first of all, this guy's body over the course of the past several months. To me, and again, I could just be imagining this, to me, looks like it has evolved. he's gotten a lot stronger. His ability to make cuts, catch passes, we saw his ability to catch passes last year. I could be wrong. Maybe he's not a future NFL back. But I don't know why. If you're looking at a guy like Tyler Goodson, what he did as a freshman, you're looking at his body changing over time. I don't know why any of us would say that he's not a future NFL back. Noah, you got thoughts on this?
He has the skill set to be a typical pro-style running back. So if he continues putting in the work, and from what I've seen, his footwork looks pretty good, and that's a key part of running as well. I mean, I don't see why he wouldn't be a future NFL running back, at least as a backup sometime in his career. I'd say he has the potential for that.
Alex?
Well, I mean, he's so young still that he's set up about as well as anybody from what we've seen so far. And his hands, which is something you can't really teach, I don't think. That's a huge plus. And, you know, he's going to get bigger and stronger. So I think he's got, like Noah said, pretty much all the potential of just about anyone.
Okay.
He looks good. I mean, he looks very athletic, very quick. He's got plenty of talent in terms of athleticism. The biggest question would be, you know, how he performs on the field. But, you know, he's got time to work on that, time to work on his game. He has a ton of potential.
We, of course, saw quite a bit out of him last year against Iowa State. He had some big runs last year against Iowa State. I mean, people forget that. It was early in the year. We know, to what, two rain delays? Wasn't it like a six-hour game?
Oh, it felt like it, if it wasn't.
Look at that. I mean, come on.
And again, this is as a freshman.
Yeah, and to me, I see an obvious difference in his body. And again, he's wearing pads here, but I mean, doesn't he look bigger, stronger, quicker now, Alex?
It's hard to say. It's hard for me to say, but...
Well, Corey, video on our end is at about 4 frames per second.
Yeah.
Is it really? Is it really that bad?
Yeah.
What is it with Sky? We need to use Zoom.
You need Zoom's to push the clicker faster on those slides, man.
All right. So you can't see anything that's going on right now.
I can intuit what's going on. But the
he just made 3 guys miss.
The explosiveness is kind of hard to gauge when it's choppy like this.
He made 2 guys miss in the backfield, made another guy miss at the line of scrimmage, and then pushed a guy over after he got the first down.
No, yeah, no, he just put his shoulder into him, Rob. Look at that. I mean,
that's a good all-around running back.
I'd like to see you do that in Madden.
The footwork and explosiveness to make people miss, and all also right. The strength to truck a guy.
So we all agree that he's going to get he's going to win the Heisman this year. we go on to the defense. We've talked about the defensive line: Joe Evans, John Wagner, Noah Shannon, Golston, Nixon, Schulte. You add in Jack Heflin. How about linebacker? Obviously, a big loss was the departure of Dylan Doyle. I don't think any of us were surprised. Were any of you guys surprised that Dylan Doyle transferred, given the situation with his dad?
No.
Alex, were you surprised at all by that?
No.
But again, it's disappointing because that, you know, here's a kid who is probably going to start this year. And now they're going to have to groom a Jack Campbell. Seth Benson, one of these guys is going to have to step up. So middle linebackers up for grabs. You've got Nick Neiman as a senior coming back. Barrington Wade's a guy that I was hoping would emerge by now. We hope he emerges this year. He's been great on special teams. Maybe he can fill in a gap at linebacker. Jaimin Colbert's a redshirt junior. Really hope he can step up because they're going to need him on a leadership role as well. Matt Hankins, Dane Belton, Riley Moss, Julius Brents. We do know DJ Johnson transferred. But again, Brents, Moss, Hankins are all back. Would you guys say those are pretty solid corners to return with?
Yep, they're
great. Okay. Dane Belton at safety. We know he played a lot of cash. Dallas Cradith, I mean, we're going to have to wait and see on him. But don't forget about Jack Kerner and Kayvon Merriweather. People forget Kayvon Merriweather was the starter heading into the year. Got injured after the first game. Jack Kerner comes in, replaces him. By the way, Jack Kerner was in a boating accident down at the Lake of the Ozarks just this last month. He is doing okay, thankful to some heroic efforts on the part of others. Noah?
Yeah, I was just going to say I did hear about that, but I haven't heard what has been how he's doing since then.
Yeah, I mean,
I believe you texted it to me. I took a cursory glance at it.
I've been told that he's in good shape. So, I mean, I think safety might be a bit of a question mark. You know, can Kayvon Merriweather or Jack Kerner play strong safety, and that would allow Dane Belton to take a place of one of these linebackers and play that cash position? I think that's, you know, we're going to have to see how that will work. But I think overall, I've said this before, the question about Iowa teams is typically not the defense. It's just not. I mean,
it's a bad team. There have been some bad Iowa teams with some bad defense.
There have been. 2012 comes to mind. I agree. But even 2014 wasn't great. But I don't know. I just look at this and I say, I'm okay with who they have coming back on defense. They've got the best kicker in the country and Keith Duncan coming back. We don't know about Caleb Shudak.
No questions about kicker. No questions.
And Shudak, Ferentz said all along, Shudak was right there with Duncan. We don't know if Shudak will be back. I know we put his name in the transfer portal. I haven't heard anything about that. He was also the kickoff specialist last year. Punter's a question mark. They've got Ryan Gersonde, who's a scholarship punter, never really emerged. Colin Rastetler is gone, along with Michael Sleep Dalton. They're both gone. And they've got another punter coming in from Australia. What is his name, Alex?
I like the disrespect towards Rastet. I don't remember.
I'm going to miss that guy just as far as fakes.
Mm.
I mean, right?
So basically his entertainment.
Right, Noah?
He drew a penalty. What was the penalty that he drew to get a first down?
No. That was Kaluzi when he did a
That's right.
Torrey Taylor. Here he is. Torrey Taylor, a new Australian punter. So they got Sleep Dalton last year, who is Australian. Now they've got Torrey Taylor, who's coming in from Australia. So we'll see about punter. And they've got the best kick returner in potentially the country in Amir Smith-Marset, right? We all agree on that. Punt returner, we'll see if Max Cooper holds onto that position or if it'll be Nico Regani or someone else. I think we all agree that position has not been great over the last few years. But Amir Smith-Marset is terrific returning kicks. So you look up and down this roster, what's the biggest question mark?
Will you to agree it's between quarterback and the offensive guards?
So I think a lot of people are dismissing the offensive line. Oh, they're going to be fine on offensive line. That's what lost them that Michigan game last year. Alex?
Yeah, I'd say O-line, quarterback, and secondary maybe.
Because the biggest question would be that third linebacker, who's going to step up in that role. But that's the biggest question for the defense. Not as big of a question, I think, as the offensive line, specifically in the guard positions, and the first starting year for Petrus.
So, Alex?
What was the question?
I mean, are you concerned about any of these positions? I mean, are you concerned at all? I mean, is this team going to win the national title?
I mean, I think the quarterback, even though we've talked about, you know, Iowa not being a quarterback-centric team, I think to break over that hump, they have to be to an extent. So quarterback to me is the one big one. I mean, obviously the O-line. Personally, I think the secondary has been a liability at times in recent years. Hopefully that's not. But O-line and quarterback, man, if we have good play out of those two spots, it's going to be, I think, a really exciting offensive team to watch.
So how good can this team be, Micaiah?
Well, it's always hard to judge from my perspective, but it looks like a pretty solid team. We'll just have to see if there are any major downsides, something like the quarterback, obviously, or if the interior offensive line continues to be a problem this year.
Hopefully
they'll be better this year.
I will say, remembering that Michigan game, I think it was the Michigan game, that was when they had like two or three holding penalties back-to-back, right? Late in the game.
Yeah, and they allowed how many, like 10 sacks or something ridiculous?
It was, and then they ended up with like a 3rd and 42 and or then, whatever it was.
Remember,
between a sack and holding.
The Penn State game was not much better. Remember that? I mean, the guards just let Penn State through every single play.
Wasn't there just one guy that just kept just running destroyed unimpeded?
Just destroyed him every single play. I mean, how does that happen?
Where is that guy? I mean, did he get drafted? Or...
Robert.
That's a good question.
I think his first name was Robert. Let me look it up here. Keep talking, Noah.
I was done talking.
Well, keep talking.
All right, take a look at this real quick.
Three what a beautiful ad.
Did you guys get your free energy drink from Casey's the other day?
Nope.
You guys have the Casey's app?
Yep.
So did you see it?
Yep. I don't make special trips to go to Casey's for a free energy drink.
But you like energy drinks.
I have a stash in the basement. I don't have to go out of the house for my energy drinks.
I like how he calls it a stash.
I'm not addicted. You're addicted.
Is anybody else noticing, looking back at this Penn State game, how swamped Stanley was every single play?
Yeah. That was also vividly. Michigan. Michigan was the same way. I mean, this was such a disappointment. Would you guys agree this was such a disappointing game? Because they had an opportunity to take down a top 10 team, and they never played that well, but they were in the game the whole time, and they could never get over the hump. Like, they could never take control. Robert, what was his name?
It was more towards the end of the game, I think.
Well,
you're not going to see it on the back of the jersey, Corey.
I know. Yes, it's Penn State.
I'm pretty sure it was right here. Near the end.
There he is, right there, 54. There's a perfect example. That was a completion. 54. Watch big old 54 and watch what he does to the guard. Right by him. You see that? Are you guys watching what I'm watching? Look at that.
About half of what you're watching.
Robert wins. Did you get that?
Say it again.
What was that, no?
Don't check. Robert Windsor.
Windsor, yep, there it is. Right there. Watch big ol' 54 right here, and watch how he destroys Iowa's left guard. I don't know if this is one of the Paulson. It's probably one of the Paulson twins, no offense. I mean, and that was a completion. That's a completion for Iowa, but he just
moved got around him like he wasn't even there.
Watch him again. Here he is again. This time he kind of gets impeded, although Iowa's getting pushed back pretty hard.
And that time they were moving the entire offensive line back.
Here he is again over there. Try and move on Kallenberger.
I remember them butted up against their own end zone with him getting through and pressuring Stanley.
Yeah, so this was at the end of that first half.
Yeah, I think the end of the game got worse.
Would you guys agree that this offense needs to really take some chances this year?
We've been saying that for years.
Have we been saying it that long, Alex?
We've all been thinking it if we haven't been saying it.
But I'm saying with the talent they have, don't you think that they need to take some chances?
Well, look at that. Oh my goodness. It really comes down to how much you trust your guys.
Watch this right here. 54, watch him just destroy his opponent and Stanley. Just right by him and then just destroys it. Come on.
Stanley's not a little guy either.
He just destroys him.
It's like a tank.
But why is it that this guy was so unstoppable? Did he get drafted, Noah?
Let me check.
Let's just hope he's not still there. And Petrus will get destroyed.
Petrus won't be able to move.
What's that?
Petrus won't be any more mobile than Stanley, probably, so he's going to get...
Well, watch this play. This wasn't even Winslow, I don't think, or Windsor, whatever his name is. Watch this play. Remember this fumble by Tyler Goodson. Okay, watch all these guards.
He plays for the Indianapolis Colts.
He does. Okay.
Yeah.
Watch these guys totally get destroyed. All of these guys get sent through. Total miscommunication on the line, and Goodson fumbles. Watch this. Look at that. I mean,
it set up well, and it just like broke down.
Well, was there like four guys that tackled Goodson?
Is it or is it not ridiculous?
It is. And that was the story of last year, according to the last 10 minutes of conversation.
But watch it right here. Watch this right here in the middle where you see the circle.
What an excellent breakdown, Corey.
Look at that.
And there again, it's the interior of the line.
Yeah, there's miscommunication. There's obviously not good technique. Strength might be a factor as well. I don't know. I guess I'm just saying, I hear people say that it's not. I mean, look at that. Did you see that? Keep in mind, everybody, this is the same game, Noah. Watch Robert Windsor here. Totally different drive, totally different play. Watch Robert Windsor right here, number 54. I mean, come on. I mean, he just destroys him. Look at that. And then he just pushes away Iowa's fullback, Ross. He's just a monger. Look at him. Watch this again. He gets up, pushes away the fullback. I mean, come on. Any thoughts?
He doesn't even look that big.
Gosh. Well, he felt pretty big in that game last year. He felt pretty big.
I remember the guards are just terrible in that game.
There he is. FYI, 6'4",
285.
Okay.
Not exactly a small person.
But take a look right here. Watch this play. Watch number 54 for Penn State right here. Watch him completely shed the Iowa offensive lineman. Watch what he does to Stanley. Right in the face.
This guy was a sixth round pick.
Look at that.
Probably his only good game.
Watch this. Watch him right here. Watch him destroy Stanley. My gosh.
Who is that, number 73?
I think that's Cody Yentz. Was that who he beat?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Cody Yentz. That's what I'm saying. These guys are going to have to improve. They've all got game experience. But, you know, Yentz is back. They're all going to have to improve because they weren't good last year.
Well, who knows? They may have some extra time to improve.
That's true. You're right. I don't know. I just hear people say, well, I'm not worried about the offensive line. How could you not be worried about the offensive line?
And we've said it a dozen times. It's not the tackles that are the problem. It's the guards. People look at the tackles and say, yeah, they'll be fine. It's the guards that are going to be the problem.
Look at that. Look at that again. Look at that again.
I think this is the drive I was thinking of.
Watch this. Watch right here. Goes right by Paulson. Let's zoom that one more time. Micaiah, what are your thoughts here? You see Paulson right here. Windsor's right there.
I'd say they're doubling the wrong man. They were doubling the other defensive tackle.
You notice Paulson's on his heels on or whoever that is every single time. That guy just moves through him. It doesn't even get slowed down.
Here's fourth and five. Here's Windsor. I have no idea what's going to happen on this play, but I have an idea. Watch 54 right there. Oh, he actually didn't get to. Oh, that was the play they completed for. Okay, they completed that for a first down to Reganey. But again, everything had to be quick.
Yeah.
See Windsor again here. That play they got off. But I mean, that was literally like. The Michigan and the Penn State games last year. What a catch by Brandon Smith.
And now you know why they kept getting called for holding both Michigan and Penn State games.
I mean, what do you think about this catch, Noah?
It was a really good catch. And credit to him for holding on to it, too, when he somersaulted.
And keep in mind, you get this guy back and Amir Smith-Marset, along with Tracy and Reganey and all those guys.
Yeah, the wide receivers are fun. Again, it's the quarterback.
It's not the offensive guards?
Well, for that part of the offense.
Let's skip ahead to the final drive of this Michigan game. I think this is kind of an interesting way of looking at this for our listeners because they're not seeing what we're seeing, but they get to hear our reaction to what we're seeing.
We've been doing 15 minutes. Hey, look at this here.
Look at this.
It's terrible.
Look at this. But yeah, no, seriously. This is the fourth quarter. We skipped ahead to the fourth quarter. Actually, let me go back. Let me just see if it's any better. Let's see if it's any better at the beginning of the game. Do you guys remember this game? I remember this game vividly. The Iowa-Michigan game?
I remember some of it.
I remember Mekhi Sargent fumbled very early. Again, probably not his fault. Mostly the line. I thought this was even more of a winnable game than the Penn State game, honestly. There it is. Look at that. No protection. The ball squirts off, and there you go. I mean, how do you get hit 6 yards into the backfield? Again, 68, Paulson. You want to explain that to me, Alex? How does Big 97 get through 68? Might it be 68 can't block?
I don't know where you put it.
I think you've made your point, Corey. And he wonders why these podcasts go for 2 hours.
You didn't know that this was a film analysis podcast, did you?
Well, it's Corey. It's always a film analysis podcast.
I actually listen to a film analysis podcast.
Of course you did.
All right.
On a regular basis.
Let's just skip ahead here. Here's the offensive line protecting Stanley. Again, pressure right in his face. Here it is again. See, they're getting away pretty quick hits here. There's Goodson. That was actually good protection. You know, some of their best passing plays were to Tyler Goodson. And I think that's going to be a key this year. He is
Were some of their best plays to Tyler Goodson? Because he was the check down route when Stanley was getting pressured.
That to me, that was that not pass interference, by the way?
They tried to throw to Oliver Martin. Tell me that wasn't pass interference.
Kind of looked like it.
They called uncatchable. Micaiah, you know you're enjoying this. We haven't seen football in like a year. Here is.
You got to remember, we're watching it, and like Micaiah said, like 4 frames per second, so it's not very enjoyable on this end.
So you guys, you're honestly, it's that slow.
Oh yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
How are you still with us?
Well, how are the listeners still with us?
Let's skip ahead here. Let's skip down to the fourth quarter.
Let's skip down to the end of the game.
Because remember, Iowa was still in this game. It was 10. The final score was 10-3. Remember that Iowa had how many chances, Alex, did Iowa have in this game? Remember how many times they had the ball with a chance to go win, tie or win the game?
I don't honestly remember how this game ended.
You'll find out. They had chance after chance. The defense kept bailing them out over and over again, and the offense could never do anything. It was literally every time Stanley had a guy in his face, every single time. As you're going to see here, he missed the field goal. All right, now Iowa with the ball back, right? Down 7, 9 minutes to go. Stanley, play fake, right in his grill. I mean, come on. And he has the ball again, 3rd and 13. And what happens again? I mean, you going to explain this to me, Noah?
Well, let's see. How many times have we covered it? It's every time. No time.
I mean, they just got a free rusher every single time. This is the best play of the game to Goodson.
Is the gist of this 20-minute segment that the O-line needs to be good next year?
The offensive guards. Here it is. This was that final. Oh, remember that one?
This would be amazing radio.
Okay, here we go. 1st and 20. They had a holding penalty. So then it's 1st and 20. They give it to Reganey. As I recall, there's the penalty you're talking about, Micaiah. So they just had a holding penalty. Here's another holding penalty. So then it ends up being 2nd and 40. Then they get a few yards back. It's 3rd and 19. Then they get a false start. So now it's 3rd and 24, Micaiah. And then what do you know? A sack. I mean, what, 3 guys converge on Stanley? And then watch the final play. Remember this, the final chance they had. And they're not going to show it. I think they get the ball back again. Yeah, 4th and 8. Here it is. They convert that one. So again, they had time, a little over a minute to go. Oh my goodness.
And we're going to an ad, really?
Let's get that. All right, here we go. Here we go. 4th and 10. Stanley running for his life. Running for his life, throws it with his left hand. Okay, Goodson, man, wouldn't it have been great to see Goodson make that first down? I think we can all agree this was a heck of a play out of Nate Stanley. Can we all agree on that? Look at this.
He was very good at throwing while being held, as good as anyone.
Watch this right here. He's being held, trying to be pulled down, and he somehow puts it left hand. Oh, my God. That is an incredible throw. Can we all agree on that? Just watch this throw, Noah. He's got guys pulling him in the opposite direction. Two guys. And, I mean, That is an incredible left-handed throw. But it didn't matter. All right, my point here being, look back at the Iowa schedule. They play Northern Illinois first, Iowa State second. Both those games are at home. Minnesota third, Northern Illinois. Their first four games are within driving distance. We all agree on that? If you're Iowa, you're thankful for that. Because you look at a team like Ohio State, look where Ohio State's scheduled to go week two. Oregon. You think they're going to Oregon week two? With this coronavirus? Look where Michigan's scheduled to play week one. Washington. Look where Michigan State's scheduled to go. BYU. My point is, everybody wants to bash Iowa's schedule, including myself. Can we all agree it might be the most favorable first month for a coronavirus outbreak? You and I, Iowa State, Minnesota, Northern Illinois, three of those games are at home. The other one's in Minneapolis.
I mean, especially with three home games. Yeah.
All right. I think this podcast has run its course. Would we all agree with that?
That's a good way to put it.
All right.
This is the real entertainment value of this podcast.
So we all agree we think there's going to be football this fall. Would we all agree there's going to probably be an announcement within the next couple of weeks?
I think there has to be.
Yeah, I agree.
Alex?
Yeah, I think they'll have to at least give some kind of update.
All right. Well, bottom line is, we shall wait, and we shall see. We've gotten pretty good at waiting during this whole thing, haven't we?
We've done a lot of it. I can't say I'm good at it.
Waiting is what we've been doing all year so far.
Hey, what's the deal with your fantasy football league, Micaiah?
I hadn't thought about it until now.
Seriously?
Yeah. That's coming up, isn't it?
Your league might have all-time high ratings this year because we ain't got nothing else to do.
Are you talking about the simulation side of it or the actual fantasy football side of it?
Both.
Now, the fantasy basketball probably could have still happened because aren't they having a second bubble in Chicago or something for the non-playoff teams?
I hadn't heard that.
What?
I think there is.
No, there's not.
Somebody look that up quick because I thought they were doing a second one for the non-Orlando teams.
Okay, let's make some quick predictions since we're hitting two hours. NBA chance. We talked at length about college football chances. Anybody want to give me percentage chance that the NBA season finishes uninterrupted?
60%. Better than even, but
who wins the championship?
I foresee two outcomes. The Lakers and the Bucks are the best two teams. One of those two teams will win. That's outcome number one. Outcome number two, the Lakers and the Bucks are the two best teams in the NBA.
I don't agree.
You're allowed to be wrong. I'm not going to fight you.
Well, you also tried telling me that Giannis was the best player in the world. And I called you out for that. And I stand by calling you out for that. Alex, you think that Giannis is the best player in the world right now?
As far as regular season, maybe. I don't think for playoff player, I'd take LeBron, KD, and maybe even Kawhi over him. Probably Kawhi.
So the other outcome I foresee is a team like the Grizzlies win the championship because random stuff happens.
The Grizzlies. Okay, what about the Mavs? What about the Mavs, man?
They're going to have Porzingis and
Doncic. Team than the Grizzlies?
Yeah, Porzingis and Doncic are back healthy.
By the way, Alex is not wrong about the Chicago bubble. It has been discussed, but it's still in discussion. They haven't made an official ruling on it yet.
That would be so convenient because the Bulls would be in that bubble.
Probably why they came to Chicago.
Because they know that they could have picked that bubble like 3 years ago and they would have known the Bulls would have been in it.
All right.
No offense.
All right, so let's go around the panel here. Who wins the NBA championship? Okay.
Oh, I'd have to flip a coin. I'm just gonna go with my gut and say Milwaukee.
Wow. Noah?
I'm going to say the Clippers.
Not a bad selection. They're probably number three on my list.
Alex?
Well, a month ago I would have said the Jazz heavily, but Bogdanovich is down. He's out. I think the Rockets are going to be a problem, but I'd have to give it to either of the LA teams, I think.
I have my own mute on my microphone. I'm muting myself. You don't need to mute me.
Okay. I'm going to go the Lakers, not because I want them to win, but because...
Because LeBron and Anthony Davis?
Okay. Yes, because LeBron and Anthony Davis, I think there's too much talent there. Although, like you guys said, if something crazy happens, anybody could win this thing. But how much of a – I mean, are you guys – how excited are you guys to see the NBA Finals? And will it be televised on ABC like it normally would be?
I mean, why wouldn't it be?
I think it'll be televised like it normally would be. But I am very excited to see basketball. Very interested to see what they do with it. I will probably make an extra special effort to watch the games live and not just replay of the game afterwards.
So if you had to choose who you want to win, obviously I want the Mavs to win. Alex wants the Jazz to win. You guys are Bulls fans, so who do you want to win?
Personally, I'm kind of rooting for Milwaukee.
Wow. Milwaukee. Are they in Des Moines as well? Micaiah.
I like the Bucks. I think they have maybe the best chance of winning. But if it was just whichever team wanted to win the most, it would probably end up being not the Lakers. God, no. No, they're number two on the list of teams I don't want to win. The Rockets are number one. Screw James Harden.
Yeah.
And Thunder. I'm a huge Chris Paul fan, and I think he's unfairly criticized for having not won a title his whole year.
He's also become a little hothead over the years.
He's always been a little hothead, but
he's a crybaby. He's a crybaby.
He does whatever it takes to win.
But he doesn't win.
Sir down.
He doesn't win. What do you mean he does whatever it takes to win? He doesn't win. He's never even been to a finals.
I got a hot take for you. If it had been James Harden's pulled hamstring and not Chris Paul's, the Rockets would have been NBA champions.
Yeah, but who would have had the ball? You imagine the Rockets playing without Harden?
By the way,
nobody know how to touch the ball.
Where is Russell Westbrook? Is he in Houston still?
He's in Houston.
So you got Westbrook and Harden in Houston. You got Paul, and who else is with him in Oklahoma City?
Gilgeous Alexander and Danilo Gallinari.
They don't have Chris Paul couldn't win when he had James Harden on the same team. How is he going to win in Oklahoma City?
He was hurt in Houston.
He's always been hurt. He couldn't win when they had – I mean, he was in New Orleans when, you know, Tyson Chandler was, you know.
What, Tyson Chandler is a star?
He was a pretty good player back in the day.
Back in the day? And then they also have, who was that other guy they had? That long, really long guy that shot behind his head, Alex. What was that guy's name?
In
New Orleans.
Shot behind his head.
What's that guy's name?
Stoyakovich.
No, not Stoyakovich. Not David West. Not Stoyakovich or David West. The other guy, really long guy. I can picture his face. Y'all don't know who I'm talking about, do you?
Nope.
Nope.
I can't think of who you're talking about either.
Does anyone from that generation remember Darren Williams torching CP3 whenever they'd meet up in the playoffs?
No.
Maybe because Darren Williams fell off the face of the planet.
I know. Nobody remembers him. He was in the news just a couple days ago because he was still getting paid by the Nets up until like 3 days ago.
Oh,
He was good until 2011.
Yeah, injuries hurt.
Mbenga was on that team.
Yeah.
Did you like Mbenga?
He was a factor.
Huh?
He was a big factor.
Oh.
What?
Noah, did you like Mbenga?
I don't know who you're talking about.
Okay. I'm talking about DJ Mbenga.
What year was this?
Can you please look him up real quick?
Is that how they said it? Was it properly said Mbenga?
Yes.
That doesn't sound right. I feel like that's just what we call them.
No, I'm telling you, his name was Mbenga.
I know how it's spelled, but I didn't know if that's how they actually pronounced it.
Noah,
what year,
Corey? 2010.
What year of Hornets?
2010. Oh, the guy I was thinking of was Rashard Lewis.
Oh, okay.
Is he on that team?
He was on the 2012 team.
Oh, well, Chris Paul was there, was he?
When was J.R. Smith on the team? Or no, he was in. He wasn't on that team. He was in Denver. Sorry.
See, Chris Paul. What year did Chris Paul leave?
Denver.
Check other years, Kai.
Chris Paul was in Denver.
Not Chris Paul. No, J.R. Smith was in Denver.
He wasn't in Denver.
Say.
Quibble.
Yeah. Back Melo days.
Mbenga and Benga.
Benga.
DJR, Ilunga and Benga.
Mbenga.
Also known as DJ. Or Congo Cash.
Congo Cash?
You do realize that his real name...
It's apparently just Benga.
According to who?
It's Bengay. Basketball reference. It's Benga. Look.
DDA Ilunga Mbenga. Right?
It's just Benga. He's from the Congo. The M is silent.
Have you played with Benga on 2K before?
No.
Hey, he is a two-time champion, though.
I didn't start using the Hornets in 2K until 2012.
So, according to this, he played in Asia in 2012.
Hey, look, Corey, he played for the Mavericks. Look.
Yeah, he did.
He was on the 06-07 Mavericks team.
Yeah, the team that went to the finals. Right?
And that was the 05-06 team. The 06-07 got not swept. First round, they were eliminated by the You Believe Warriors.
Yeah, they got swept by the Warriors, didn't they?
Yeah, they were the best team in the NBA that year.
Dirk put a hole in the wall.
Did he really?
06-07, right? Yeah. They put a sign next to the hole he punched. He threw a chair, put a hole in the wall. The Warriors put a sign up next to it that said, "We Believe."
Here's an article from Bleacher Report, 2009. Team... NBA teams prepare for the DJ Mbenga.
Talking about this.
No, listen. It says NBA teams prepare for the Mbenga free agency sweepstakes.
Six games, Corey. The Warriors Mavericks series went six games.
Did you hear that, Alex?
Yeah.
The NBA teams were preparing for the DJ Mbanga free agency sweepstakes.
Hmm.
Is that like the exciting event?
Good old Mbanga. Don't you just love saying Mbanga, Noah?
No, because that's not his name.
Didn't the Mavs have Mbanga and Diop at the same time?
They had Mbanga, Diop, and then they had, what was the other big lug that couldn't do anything?
Dampier. Oh,
Dampier. Eric Dampier was their starting center.
Oh, dear.
Look up Eric Dampier.
Brandon Bass.
Brandon Bass. Look up Dampier, Micaiah.
Eric Dampier.
He played for the Heat, I think. Didn't he win a chip with them?
Can you, yeah, can you see? Play. Can you still see my screen? Okay.
Wow, he played in 96 to 97. He played a long time in the NBA. Look at that.
Did not win a championship. For the Olympics.
Sure. With the Heat?
He was with 10-11. The Heat.
That... That's the year they lost to the Mavs.
Oh.
Yeah, he was with the Heat the year they lost to the Dallas.
Poor guy. He went from Dallas to Miami to lose to Dallas.
After they had lost to wait a minute. He was with Dallas when they lost to Miami in 06.
Yes.
He was with Miami when they lost to Dallas in 11. Oh,
coincidence? I think not.
That is weird, man.
Are we done talking about 15-year-old basketball?
All right, you guys got anything to add here? We can continue this conversation after if you so choose, but I want to wrap this thing up because I don't want to have to edit a 3-hour podcast. All right, are we done here?
We haven't gotten into the weeds with players like Sviatoslav Makeluk.
We will have time on future podcasts to discuss the NBA and college football more.
We'll never get around to the NBA.
By the way, we haven't even gotten a decision out of Luka Garza yet. We're waiting that. It's going to come before August 3rd. Alex, your thoughts on that? You still think he's coming back?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, me too. We'll see. That's the biggest decision, I think. That'll make all this waiting time worth it if Luka Garza comes back for another year. But we shall wait and see. This has been week 120 of Brad's Branded Thoughts. We'll be with you hopefully within the next couple of weeks. As soon as we get a decision, an announcement, some sort of actual something we can talk about as far as a plan for college football, we will talk about it, and then we'll be on to officially preview. We'll actually spend time previewing the NBA bubble in Orlando, and that's coming up in just a few weeks, so we'll be with you before then and hopefully get a special guest. Don't know who it'll be, maybe a basketball player. Would be great, talk hoops and get a perspective from somebody who's playing the game or has played the game. So we'll be back next week or next time here on Brada's Branded Thoughts for week 121. For the Krukos, for Alex Brada, I'm Corey Brada. We thank you for listening. And we thank you for enduring. Have a good week. Stay safe. We'll talk to you soon. Go Hawks.